Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the New Statesman podcast. Yes, we thought we'd sneak another one in before Christmas. I'm joined by Barbara Speed and Stephen Bush to discuss what else? Star Wars. Be warned that there probably will be spoilers. There will be spoilers, right?
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Yeah. No point otherwise.
Okay, so if you haven't seen the film yet, you're very lazy. You should have got around to it already. I can't help you. Stephen, I'm going to ask you to do something very unfair to start off with, which is give me a score out of 10 for the film.
An 8. I'm giving it an 8 out of 10.
Barbara, would you quibble with that 8?
I would probably give it a 7, but then again, I'm not a huge Star Wars fan. But I'd probably give it a 7 because I think it was very accessible, so I don't think you had to be a huge fan to love it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would probably... Yeah, I would give it somewhere else, because as I was watching it, I was thinking, this is a very, very well-made film. Like, this is doing a lot of heavy lifting. It's bringing a lot of people back in. It's ticking off lots of moments that you want to see. You know, everybody in the cinema was very excited to see the Millennium Falcon again. Very excited to see Han and Leia have a conversation again. But it had so much work to do. I don't know how you feel about this, Stephen. That I felt that left it. It didn't have any time to do any character work. It left it feeling oddly characterless.
Well, I mean, it is a part one of a trilogy, and it has all of the limitations that part ones always do. I mean, I think a lot of it lives or dies on how good the next one and the one after that turns out to be. Because it had to do a lot. It had to kind of give us the crowd-pleasing sort of... It had to pass the baton on. Quite literally, you have the passing of the Millennium Falcon from Han Solo to Rey. It had to introduce the new Core 3. And I suppose, arguably, it kind of failed at that because Poe Dameron, the pilot... doesn't really have that many scenes other than Nate giving Finn his name.
Yeah, I thought that was a really underusing of Oscar Isaac. So Oscar Isaac is a fantastic actor. So he's been in two things that I've seen this year. So Ex Machina, first of all, where he plays a kind of unbearable tech billionaire, really kind of entitled bro. And he looks really great in that. And last year, I think it was the end of last year, he was in the Coen Brothers' Inside Llewyn Davis, which was not a film that I particularly liked per se, but he had to do a part where he had to, you know, sing as well as basically Dave Van Ronk. He had to be somebody you could imagine almost making it as a singer, and he had to act in, you know, a fairly low-key film that was intensely focused on him. And in both of those, he is fantastic. And here he gets 2-3 decent length scenes, really. He gets sort of like, he gets one decent scene and then like a bit of a high five, and that's kind of all the legwork he gets to do.
He gets that kind of cliffhanger excitement, though, of this idea that you think he's been dead for the entire film and then he's not. And there's a kind of emotional kind of currency in that scene, I suppose.
But that's interesting, because that's also about how much this film was so weighted by, and you had to read it with the expectation of knowing, in the sense, like, you know that these people have signed up for multi-year deals, right? I think that was so, that was one of the interesting things to, it takes away some of the suspense when you know that certain things kind of can't happen, which is why, which is why I was very pleased in a way that Han Solo died, because it did feel, it wasn't quite the kind of Game of Thrones Ned Stark moment, but it did feel like, okay, at least we are going to make some unexpected choices here.
For a children's film, what is essentially a children's film? It is quite a brave decision, though, because he's such a core part of the other trilogies that, or one of the other trilogies?
The other trilogy, yeah.
The only trilogy that Stephen admits exists.
No, okay. I'm not one of those people.
No, I listened to your Harry Potter podcast, and you literally said the films that don't exist.
Okay, it turns out I am one of those people. Although marriage has changed me because my wife is not actually insisted that we not only buy, but we rewatched all of the prequels in advance of watching Force Awakens. She is less orthodox than I am. She actually quite likes, I mean, she prefers the original films.
But. So small shout out to Alex Hearn of the Guardian Tech Weekly podcast, who used to work here. He says there's such a thing as the machete edit of Star Wars. And it's the idea that, obviously, what do you do now if you want to start? You don't want to watch them in order like 1, 2, 3, 4. So you don't want to watch the prequels, and then you don't want then A New Hope and the other three, because you will then watch those last four in the knowledge that Darth Vader is Luke's father. So actually, you should watch 4, 5, and then 2, 3, and then 6. And you should never bother watching The Phantom Menace, because the feeling is that there's nothing in The Phantom Menace that is necessary, that is referred back to in the other films.
So I'm a skeptic about machete order. To continue my role in the podcast of being the person who generates angry emails, for a couple of reasons. One, I think Barbara's exactly right. It is a children's film. It's what I like about Star Wars. It's a fun, I'd say it's a very good family film in the way that the best Disney films are. They have something for the adults and the children. And my fear with this was I wasn't sure how much, other than perhaps BB-8, there is for watching children in this film. I fear perhaps it could drag a little bit. Although, of course, one of the things, and it does very well, is the expectation for most chill people who have happy childhoods is your parents will forgive you and everything will be fine. And what is clever about Han's death, I kind of assumed he would die because he's just a little bit too cool, Han Solo.
Well, let's also put it out there that he maybe was a little bit geriatric.
But I think there's another important thing, which is that killing him off kind of demonstrates that they were willing to cut off some of the ties, because I think the whole film is this weird tension between these new characters and then this constant people popping up who you're meant to recognise. And as someone who's seen the other films but quite a long time ago, I found that a little bit stressful, because you're kind of thinking, do I need to know who these people are? Like, and I think that is an interesting move, because it shows that the importance is now on those children, though, that younger generation who we're introduced to for the first time.
But my problem with that, with Han's death, was that I didn't feel that there was... that I had enough time to sort of really be upset about it. And I guess I've spent talking to people who were much more moved by it, because they had already came to it with much more invested in the relationship. But it was kind of, it happened in the middle of a, right, you know, unlike the, tell me if I'm wrong, but the scene between Luke and Vader is basically the end of the film, isn't it? That kind of climactic scene. It is properly used as a revelation and a climax. Whereas this kind of happened like, and Chewie went like, fired his bowcaster, and then they kind of had to keep moving on with the rescue. And then there's one moment where Leia kind of looks sad in the control room, but it isn't kind of used as the emotional apex of the film.
It's not Dumbledore's death, which it kind of should have been.
But it's also it's given I think about the level of emotional weight as Obi-Wan Kenobi's death in A New Hope, when once again it's the middle of an escape from a base. Except, yeah, his body vanishes in one case into the pit, in another case because he becomes one with the Force. I wasn't overly moved by it, and I suppose that is arguably one criticism of it. But I think I find my viewing of that scene very hard to detach from the fact there was a moment when I kind of thought, oh, they're going to have to kill you off. And I think it was basically almost immediately after he'd been introduced and he's running around shooting the Rathtars, the weird E.T. alien things, and I just thought
the giant squid things,
and it's just like, but you can't have this character around overshadowing the other ones.
He's stealing all the oxygen,
which doesn't really fit with the whole kind of vibe of this film.
I think that was the problem, is that he was just he was walking away with every scene, and you were kind of like, oh, can't we just have a scene about the old roguish sea dog kind of going around doing stuff. From a sort of feminist perspective, Barbara, how did you feel about Rey? Because people are getting very, very excited, much as they did when Mad Max came out earlier, about the fact that you've now got a female action hero.
I think it's important, and I mean, I don't see that they could have done anything else. I mean, one of our colleagues was pointing out that the three casting agents on this film were apparently all women, which does, I think, show through. It does sort of bludgeon you with its alleged feminism. So she, from the very first scene, she won't be touched by
get rid of my hand.
She won't be helped. She does mechanics. She's a bit weird and geeky, and although those things are obvious, I do think they work, and especially, again, it's for a younger audience. They need things to be spelled out for them, and I think from that point of view, she's quite a good heroine. And she's a bit sulky. She's not kind of charming and smiley.
I think
that's good.
I think the thing I like most about her is that she's self-reliant. I mean, I know she's very passive in this film because sort of things are happening to her, but she, you get the sense that, you know, even if her family never came back, she would carry on eking out that really difficult existence. You know, she's not, she's unlike Padme or unlike, you know, Leia originally, she's not a princess. She is, and
she does have the problem of Star Wars protagonists so far, because so much of the plot happens to her, she has less sort of depth to her, but, you know, she does also get to chop up Adam from Girls. In,
but she doesn't have to make a defining choice, does she? She's sort of, at the moment, we haven't really seen it. So Finn has had a moment where he has made a choice. You know, he chooses not to fire his weapon. He chooses not to kill.
Isn't her defining choice not to sell BB-8?
But does she know what BB-8 is at that moment? Or does she think, well, maybe this droid will be more useful to me than the money?
I think she's just empathetic, isn't she? Because also there's this underlying thing in Star Wars, isn't there, where the way they interact with the robots kind of shows how nice they are. Give them agency and allow them to be kind of.
Yeah, there's a screenwriting
like
thing called Save the Cat, where if you want people to like your protagonist, you make them save a cat.
Yeah.
So she saves the droid, I guess.
Yeah. She also makes a decision to go with them, and it's very clear that she does decide to do that because she has very strong reasons for wanting to stay. And I think that the conversation where she kind of barters with Han Solo about this job, because he kind of is an old sexist and then is convinced by her because she's good with a wrench or whatever. And that's quite a nice interplay of the kind of the old world of the other films and then this new kind of feisty female character, which does, again, I think work quite well.
And Rey and Finn, actually, I think, do they not have an identical character arc in the... Then Finn's sort of moment when we realise that he's, you know, heroes, when he doesn't join in with shooting the villagers at the beginning, and then raises when she doesn't sell BB-8 and she, you know, she stops him being scrapped for parts. And then they are both given an opportunity to be heroic again, which they run away from. So Finn wants to escape to the Outer Rim and then changes his mind and then obviously tries to fight Kylo Ren. But we kind of know right from the beginning that he is going to get owned. He is just not anywhere near his equal. But he kind of redeems himself with that heroic act. Rey, the lightsaber, calls to her. She runs away from it. And then she comes back to defend her friend Finn from this big scary villain. And she doesn't just try. She succeeds in beating him off. Yes, because he's injured and you assume he'll come back having completed his training and be more powerful and scary in the next one, but it's they have the same, I would say, the same arc, but that might be because I'm already becoming like a Finn Rey shipper.
And that's no bad thing to be. The other thing I think I'd probably give a shout out to is the special effects in this film, which I know that they did a lot of them with models rather than CGI, and I think you can really tell because you don't get that kind of totally weightless, these aren't, you know, the things, for example, the kind of new cantina that has the kind of look of a temple about it, that looks really great and solid, and when that's destroyed you actually you really feel that that's, and I think the new weapon looks really great, although I've had many conversations at home about how you can't, like, how many suns can there be, what is the, if it's a planet and they drain the sun, what is it orbiting? there's been a lot of quite tragic conversations about physics that have eventually devolved to, like, it's magic space, it's space magic. One other question I want to ask, which is, who do you think Rey is? Can we make predictions that we can look back on in a couple of years' time and go, like, oh, imagine what it was like before we found out that Rey was Chewbacca's daughter?
So my instinct at first was she had to be Luke's daughter, but then I liked the idea of her actually being Snoke's daughter, and perhaps that's why she's been hidden on Jakku in that bit when she's told to wait. I think that's quite a nice idea. But it feels likely to me that, and that has a nice symmetry in that Kylo Ren is born from the light but turns to the dark. If she's born from the dark but turns to the light, that's quite a nice echo. I also want to, just in case only tiny off chance it is right, want to get my Snoke prediction out here. I hope, partly because I thought the special effect was a bit pants, that it turns out that Snoke is actually a Wizard of Oz style figure, and he doesn't really look like this large terrifying hologram, and then the reality is actually something much less impressive. I think that would be quite interesting.
I sort of wish he ends up looking like Michael Portillo on Great Continental Railway Journeys in just a pair of great coloured slacks. And then he was like, I was never going to get taken seriously in the evil villain business in these slacks.
Yeah.
I do think there was actually the reference to him. He looked a bit Voldemort-y to me. And there was a problem that Kylo Ren, with the dark hair and the long sort of frock coat, looked very Severus Snape-y. Mm. So this is the other internet fan theory that's going around, is the idea that is Kylo Ren an undercover agent, and actually he's been playing a kind of double game.
Well, also, my theory of Rey ties into this in a way I haven't seen elsewhere yet. So I assumed all the way through that she was Luke's daughter, and just for some reason thought this had been explained, and then was told this was actually a wild theory. But part of this is that when Kylo Ren is talking about going to Jakku to get her, to get the droid back, he kind of sets this weird challenge where he says, go in there unarmed. And then someone says to him something like, don't let your personal things affect your decision making. And then he clearly knows who she is. There's another reference to him knowing who she is. And then he says, this girl who, when he meets her, he says, this girl who I've heard so much about. So I think he knows that she's his cousin and has been trying to protect her in some way. Because to say go into this planet without any weapons is kind of a bizarre challenge to set. It doesn't make any sense unless he is trying to protect someone there.
And when he hears that they've met a girl with a ship on Jakku, he's like, a girl? He clearly knows who the girl is, so there's clearly...
And also I think he would have said something to his overlord if it was his daughter. That
there is another
quite
theory as well, which
me.
Is that Skywalker functions in the same way as Snow does in Game of Thrones, so it's your generic name for an illegitimate child, so that's why, you know, if you don't know who your parents are, you just get Skywalker as a surname. But it's really interesting, obviously, because...
But his aunt and uncle are called... Lars and Beru are also...
Are they also Skywalkers?
They are also Skywalkers, okay. And Anakin is a Skywalker.
But then, did Anakin know who his parents were?
But we presume he does in the first film. No, I think that theory is...
It's whack.
Sorcery, it's crazy. It should be burned at the stake. I don't like it at all.
Where would you like it to go in the next film? What do you want to see, Stephen?
I would like Rey to get together with either Finn, or I would like Finn to get together with Poe Dameron. I thought they had a nice kind of like Top Gun-y style vibe. You know that bit when they see each other again, they pat each other on the arm.
I would love that for how like the actual conniptions that would cause across.
Just the explosion of, the explosion of anger from a certain type of Star Wars fan would be able to power the West Coast of America from the angry, like...
But also the fact, like, presuming there's going to be so much chipping of them already, there's going to be so much slash fix. So it's going to be, that would usher in, like, the nerd apocalypse, basically. Like, Gamergate would look like a sort of minor, you know, tiff over breakfast.
I think I would like the lightsaber fights to be a bit better. That was, I don't know, it's just something kind of...
But they were amateurs. That was kind of the point. He couldn't be very good because she couldn't be good because she'd never done it before. So presumably if kind of training comes into it in the next films, that will be better.
I thought the space fights were good, but I did think that the space, it was too much a rerun of the air conditioning duct in the Death Star. So I think I would like to see, you know, given that the references to them were, you know, things like the Dam Busters and World War II dogfights, you know, there are lots of other kind of great things that you could do with that. So I think a good space fight is good. Like maybe an ice planet. We kind of did have an ice planet, I guess, but...
What do you think?
I really like all the sort of dynasty stuff that's almost a bit Harry Potter-esque, that obviously it came before Harry Potter, but the idea that all these things are kind of buried in history and then they kind of pop up again and everything's related, I kind of like that side of it. I think it would be kind of disappointing if Rey was just random.
Oh yeah, I do like that kind of sense of families and returning, and you know, I've seen the same eyes in different faces. I hope we see more of Maz Kanata again. I thought she was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. She was the kind of
Lupita Nyong'o's character.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah. I thought she was very good when she did kind of good. I like the eyeglasses thing that she did. That was quite funky.
Embedded in her wrinkles.
And I thought Gwendolyn Christie did a reasonable job with what was an extremely like generic evil bastard bee, basically. And I presume she's coming back.
Yeah, Kathleen Kennedy has said she's coming back. And I think one of my favourite villain dynamics, which I think very few of the reviews seem to have touched on, is the kind of gentle kind of kvetching at each other between General Hux. Is it Hux? Someone will email to correct me.
Is that Donald Gleason's character?
Donald Gleason's character and Adam from Girls, playing an even bigger villain than he does as Adam from Girls. Bom, 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 bom. I just love their kind of sort of gentle negging of one another. So that wonderful bit when he's like, my troops aren't trained in hide and seek. Well, what are they trained in? Treason? It was just the kind of wonderful, like, kind of this, you know, like they're slightly Statler and Waldorf of the dark side thing.
I did enjoy the smashing up of stuff when Adam got angry.
You're just going to refer to him as Adam Guffin Girls.
Yeah, well, it's much easier for me. That's more my, I'm more the target demographic for that. But that's kind of the best counter actually to the argument that he's this kind of double-crossing supervillain, that he just literally can't keep his temper with even tiny things that have gone wrong. So I think that the kind of adolescent gone way off the rails is a slightly more convincing.
You've just made me think that maybe there'll be a bit like where he's like sitting with his helmet on, like strumming a guitar on his bed in the next one.
I don't want any dinner, Mum.
But that is based...
I'm not hungry.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a difficult question to finish, which is it your favourite film of the year now that we are at the end of the year?
I think of its genre. I think of the kind of the films that I'll watch again when I just want something, then I want something easy that I can watch after dinner, then I'll just like leave feeling quite cheery and like, oh, the goodies win. I think it's probably the best film in that genre. I thought it was comfortably better than Avengers 2 or Ant-Man of any of that genre of film. And I think probably the best film... It feels a bit churlish to compare it to The Lobster, because The Lobster was very good, but I wouldn't say, you know, when I got home, oh, I've had a hard day. Should we watch The Lobster again?
Yeah, like, it's hard to compare, isn't it? Yeah. But I think that, I mean, to me, I've been told this is rubbish, but to me, this scene quite influenced by The Hunger Games. And I think the sort of way the young characters were played were quite derivative of that, which is a good thing, because I think The Hunger Games did really redefine kind of young adult films. And I think that maybe I think The Hunger Games is slightly better, just because it allows itself to be darker than...
Well, some of The Hunger Games.
Some of The Hunger... The
original.
Last, yeah, the final one, I think, was...
Okay, because I think it's difficult to make it... I think you can probably only compare like with like, but I think I would put it above Ant-Man, below the last Star Trek... But then I am...
Oh, that is a terrible opinion.
But it's got Benedict Cumberbatch in it.
But it's an appalling
film. It's
got
Benedict Cumberbatch turned up to 11. They made him slightly bigger.
It also literally has that bit where, like, the J.J. Abrams turns to the audience and goes, I have utter contempt for you, when Alice Eve just takes off her clothes for no reason, which is basically, he might as well hold a card up going, hey, fanboys, I know what you like. You don't like plot. You like women. Go away. And he's just, no, Into Darkness is terrible. It's a terrible film.
Okay.
Well. Oh, Days of Future Past, which was also this year, another really good, fun escapist film. I think possibly it would be a close tussle between Force Awakens and Days of Future Past.
What about Live, Die, Repeat / Edge of Tomorrow, which I'm not sure if that came out this year or if I just watched it on Netflix this year. The Tom Cruise film with the repeating time?
No, I have no memories of Live, Die, Repeat. Oh, did, the Wes Anderson...
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
And film. Did The Grand Budapest Hotel come out this year?
No, that was last year.
Oh, I liked that.
I would quite like to see
so it's not.
A Wes Anderson directed Star Wars, though. Imagine that, like little puppets and stuff.
I would...
Lots of paisley wallpaper inside the Death Star.
The one thing I think is a shame is a lot of people sort of continually complain about Hollywood and remakes. I think the problem with Hollywood and remakes is they don't do enough of... Let's see what Wes Anderson does with Star Wars. Let's see what... So we've seen so many Spider-Mans, but they've all been the same Spider-Man. I would love to see...
Martin Scorsese's Spider-Man.
But, yeah, I would love to see what someone who mainly makes teen films... I'd love to see a John Green script treatment of The Amazing Spider-Man. I think that would be quite...
Yeah, we do it with music, but films are so expensive that those games are...
Yeah, like $200 million is a lot to go... Really weird to see what they
this
do.
This is why
it.
I would be such a great billionaire. And if there are any billionaires listening wondering who to bequeath to, my full name is Stephen Cooper Quashie, sorry about the weird middle name, Bush, and just care of the New Statesman. Any bequest you want to make to me?
I think probably to finish that we should, like, instead of theme music, shouldn't we do the Barbara song?
Should we sing, are we going to do it to the Imperial March or to the Star Wars theme?
Okay. So thank you for listening, everybody. Happy Christmas and Merry 2016. Ba, 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 ba.
Hi. Hi, I'm Caroline.
And I'm Anna.
And we host the New Statesman's pop culture podcast, Seriously.
This week, we talked about horror parody show Scream Queens, the film of the Alan Bennett play Lady in the Van, and 90s children's dog-themed TV show Wishbone.
You can find us at newstatesman.com/SRSLY or on iTunes or on the podcatcher of your choice.
You've been listening to the New Statesman podcast, presented by me, Helen Lewis, and produced by Anna Leskowitz. You can find us every week at newstatesman.com/podcast or on iTunes. Our theme music is Devil with the Devil by the Underscore Orchestra, licensed under Creative Commons.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.